Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cash and welcome to the Dork Forest. Intros are hard. I have a new album. You should be listening to it. I have a new hour. You could be watching it on YouTube, but I appreciate you listening to this, The Dork Forest. You could go to JackieCasia.com or TheDorkForest.com, and you can listen to it there. You can listen to it on wherever you're listening to it right now. You can watch it on YouTube separately, and that is where Altercation is also streaming. The album is available wherever you listen to any kind of album, and it's also on Bandcamp, which has a bunch of other, some very old Dork Forests that are free on that channel. Otherwise, you should know that the Dork Forest is, I don't have a Patreon, so feel free to donate. If you have $100 a year, I would love $100 a year from everybody. You can hand me a sweaty wad of 20s when you come and see me do stand-up, or you can email me or Venmo me. The email would be PayPal, jackie@jackiecation.com, where you can also email me. And Venmo is just @JackieCation, which is like my Instagram and my TikTok and all the things. And there's merch. There's Dork Forest merch. There's Made of Bees merch. And I don't know. There's so much stuff. I can't remember everything. You're doing vital work by listening to the Dork Short Forest, and I'm glad you are. And I hope you want to hear about somebody's dorkdom, because that's what's going to happen right now.
Showbiz. Showbiz. Hi, Rangers. It's me, Jackie Cation. You're familiar with my work because you're right here. This week on the Dork Forest, Rangers, it's he's an educator in musical theater, but he's also a lyricist and a musician. And his name is Ryan Scott Oliver. And there is a RyanScottOliver.com. And it's @RyanScottOliver on the Instagram and such. And he has published a book that you're going to want to read called, if you love the musical theater as much as I'm pretty sure most of you do, How to Succeed in Musical Theory. Theater without really dying. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
That's it. And it's in the notes and you should get it. And we're weirdly enough going to talk about musical theater. It's going to be great. I've talked about musical theater quite a bit.
Really?
I have. Yes. On this show, several different guests. But the thing about musical theater is that it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
There's no bottom.
Right.
Like it's the biggest well in the world and you could drop a coin in and everybody likes five different things and, you know, and everybody kind of likes the same things, but also doesn't. So,
yes, that's true. Lots of opinions, lots of strong opinions in a musical theater. And some of them are right.
Some of them are right. And all of them are, you know, I'm going to lower the bar here and say the stakes are not too high.
It's
you can
great.
Have whatever opinion you great. Would like.
Absolutely.
For a musical. What I like, the two that you prepared are very specific, and that is my favorite thing on the Dork Forest.
Good.
Five stories that should have been musicals but aren't yet.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me the first one, and then we might go back in time and ask more questions.
Absolutely.
So, what's the first one that you think?
Well, I'm really thrilled to be here talking to you. You're wonderful, and I'm a fan. Five stories. And I realized I actually zeroed in on movies. Movies that should be musicals, because, you know, the audience is that they're paying $300 for a seat. They want some name brand recognition.
Okay.
I love an original piece. Obviously, as a writer myself, I love to do an original piece. But you know what? You can't really beat intellectual property, IP, as we all call it in the biz, that everybody knows and loves. And the first one is, I think, kind of an obvious one, I think, to everybody. It's Hocus Pocus. It's not a musical yet. Kathy and Jimmy, well, Bette Midler, of course, and Sarah Jessica Parker. And God, I saw that movie in 1993, and it, like so many other gay boys, it made me gay, probably. But you know what? So other than the fact that it's about witches and, you know, witches, magic, there's a certain level of fabulousness. I think when people say like, what makes a good musical? And I think there has to be something fabulous about it is my opinion. There has to be something sort of glamorous, something heightened, something loud, something crazy, something magical, something that just makes it feel like it can't be a play. It has to be, there has to be music, there has to be singing.
There has to be something bigger than that.
Yes.
Something bigger. Interesting. Yeah. I think I've seen Hocus Pocus. I might have aged out, but I think there was a niche, but it's a Halloween thing, right?
So. It is.
Are they the bad guys?
They are the bad guys, but they're delightful. And it being Bette Midler, there is a musical number already in. It's I Put a Spell on You.
Okay.
And there's already a musical number in there. You know, you got a very exciting protagonist. You have an opportunity for maybe puppetry because there's a cat that talks.
Sure, and, sure.
There's a little bit of a love story. It's got all of the trappings of a really exciting musical. And here's the other thing. When people adapt movies and books and things like that into musicals, I think there's another rule that people don't talk about enough, which is that the material has to be a B. Because if the material is an A, we don't need it to be a musical. You want the musical to improve on the source material. Because
right.
That's when you get, and there's no shade to these things, when you get a musical like Mrs. Doubtfire or Groundhog Day or Tootsie, you know, people have varying opinions about them. But I do think that unlike something like Hairspray, it is not those musicals aren't necessarily universally like acclaimed or beloved. Right. Another good example of one that did it right, I think, is like Honeymoon in Vegas. It's a great musical because the source material is good, but it's imperfect. And so Hocus Pocus is really imperfect.
Right, it is imperfect, and it could only be because there is a celebration that casting is amazing, and you could cast. There's 1,000 women who would love to be in that play as a musical.
Absolutely,
and this makes me want to do a follow up episode. We're not even 10 minutes into this episode. I would like to do another follow up episode. What needs to be on ice? Anyway, but musicals, I think, is the way to start. And I think you're right. Groundhog Day isn't broken.
Yeah.
Tootsie isn't broken.
Right.
There's no need to add music to it.
Yeah.
When ABBA came out with Mamma Mia, or when Mamma Mia came out, I was like, okay, there's no story
right
that was in their music. And I had a short-lived, but before I realized it, first of all, I don't do that. I wanted there to be an Air Supply musical. I was like, it might as well just have an Air Supply musical.
Yeah.
Where they take the works of that one album with the balloon on the cover.
Yeah.
And then turn that into a weird musical that amazing actors want to be in for some reason.
Yes.
And I mean, Christine Baranski, she's open. She's she'll work. She's like, oh, I'm not busy. I'm available. So Hocus Pocus, as a musical, you're right. That would, because of the, I'm by the way, wearing, I don't think it's a musical, but.
Yo, it is on stage right now.
I went and saw it in London.
And it's a play?
And it's a play.
Okay. All right.
And the Totoro puppet is the size of this room.
Yep.
The actor climbs on it.
Wow.
And it's glorious. And and the puppeteers are amazing. But that was a movie that was also not broken.
Right.
But to turn it into something else, like puppets, is just a joy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, and I think taking something like Hocus Pocus, when you have the Bette Midler song already as an anchor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see that.
It's fun. Should we go to number two?
Sure. Let's go to number two.
Number two. So this is kind of breaking my rule because I actually do think this movie is an A.
Okay.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I never saw it.
Jason Segel, Mila Kunis, Kristen Bell. It came out. Ooh, I have it. I have like my little cheat sheet of information here. It came out in 2008. It was produced by Judd Apatow.
Okay.
So one thing about me is that I don't love romantic comedies, partially because I have been this very lucky in love, and I don't like seeing people.
Oh, the madness!
Oh, the madness! Yeah. I love a horror movie. A horror movie really makes me feel safe. Makes me feel real, really comfortable. It really does.
Do you feel seen? Because safe. You're afraid and safe.
I feel like I love a good dystopia or zombie apocalypse I'm a little bit like, well, this is worse than the world we live in. So that's nice. You know what I mean?
Okay. So it could get worse. Interesting.
It could get worse.
I have my thing with horror movies is and dystopian future stuff is it feels predictive. It's sort of like SVU where I'm just like, well, I don't know that guy was ever thinking about doing that. And now look at this.
Yep.
And it was like, I've always wanted to stick my wiener into the knot of a tree.
Yep.
And now I've seen it done on television and maybe I'm going to go do that. So scary movies scare me. And tense movies make me tense.
Uh-huh.
And so craptastic movies soothe me. Like,
it's funny. They don't make you feel crappy. A craptastic movie might make me feel crappy.
Right. Because I know what you mean though. When it's sort of like reality television. Mm-hmm. I already know people in my life that are making bad life choices. I can't possibly watch this. Turn off the camera and help them. But it does soothe some people. Horror. Yeah. They're just like, all right, this is the worst thing that could happen. A doll becomes alive and then stabs somebody. Well, that's ridiculous. And I'm just going to watch this and laugh and get jump scared.
Exactly.
And yeah, so that's kind of interesting. But what is Forgetting Sarah Marshall about?
So it is a comedy.
It's a romantic comedy?
It technically, I would say it's a comedy with romance.
Okay.
It is about speaking of SVU, it is about a man, Jason Segel, who is has been dating Sarah Marshall, who is an actress on like an SVU like TV show. And it opens with her breaking up with him. And then he really goes through it and he basically decides, I'm going to go to Hawaii to like run away from my troubles. And who should he find there but Sarah, who is now dating Russell Brand. And so it's about him sort of like navigating the fact that he is there with his ex, but did not expect to be there. And of course, he, spoiler for everybody, you know, he falls in love with Mila Kunis, because who couldn't? If I were straight, I would fall in love with Mila Kunis.
Right. And you can't spoil something that's 20 years old. You're doing great. It's okay.
I think that's true.
Yeah. But I think everyone saw that coming.
Exactly. And in the movie, Jason Segel is a composer. He actually is like the composer on her SVU show where he's like, you know.
Oh, okay.
And he's writing a Dracula musical and it's funny and it's with puppets and it's terrible. And so there's already kind of music in that.
Yeah. Right.
It's very fun. It's very funny. It's got a great it's a rare example of a movie for me that I can watch it at any time and I never get tired of it. And that is not true of a lot of comedies, especially not a lot of comedies with romance.
Right. So if it were a musical and there's already a lyricist essentially baked into the plot.
Right.
So people could break into song.
Yes.
And would it be like, do you picture it kind of a South Pacific kind of situation because they're in Hawaii?
No. It would be somewhere between like Book of Mormon and like Next to Normal, where it's funny, it's silly, it's contemporary musical theater, but it does have like a little bit of depth and grit, like a Next to Normal.
Okay.
And I think I would. Oh, and I should note, by the way, that every single one of these I'm pitching, I want to write. So,
yeah, well, sure. I mean, it turns out you have the skill set to do it. And so you would like to do that. Yes.
I would. And I would love it.
For the love of God, let Ryan Scott Oliver do that because
thank you, Jackie.
They're his ideas. Yeah. So, but and Hocus Pocus, what would you say? Though, I mean, that one kind of works because it mostly takes place in a house, right? Like there aren't that many sets. There's a graveyard and a house, right?
A graveyard, a house, and like probably like a street and a party. Mm-hmm. There's a party. So yeah, but you're right. It is not, there are not too many sets.
So it's kind of built for theater. It'd be kind
That's
of
right.
it, easy enough for that. Did you ever see, now I digress, and this is what the Dork Forest is often about. Sure. Did you ever see Hamlet 2?
No, but I am familiar with it. It's like a comedy, right?
It is. It's two separate movies, really. It's about a theater teacher in a high school, and they're going to discontinue the theater department at the high school. So he is going to do a benefit.
Yep.
And so the first half of the movie is how his life is a terrible thing. It is not a good, it is a drama. And then the second half of the movie is when they put up the play Hamlet 2 that he wrote. And Hamlet 2 is so funny that it's ridiculous. He has a device because everybody keeps saying, doesn't everyone die at the end of Hamlet? And he's like, I have a device. And it is wonderfully ridiculous. And I
Rock
don't know
me,
if
sexy
that...
Jesus. I see this. I've actually heard Rock Me, Sexy Jesus before.
Right, which I think is a musical number in it, right?
Yes, it is.
And so it could, to some extent, actually, I only want to see Hamlet too. I don't want to see the drama of the fact that he's essentially thrown his life away. Because he gets his life back when... it's all set in Tucson too. So, I mean, that's just one, there's nothing to talk about. I've been to Tucson.
Yep. Done some time in
anyway,
Tucson.
Go ahead.
Okay.
But, but what's the third one?
Third one. Okay. Now, Jackie, if you haven't seen this, I'm going to start to think that you've never seen a movie before. This one is, Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino, which should surprise your listeners because why should this be a musical? Now I'm cheating.
Right.
I'm cheating really badly because it probably shouldn't be a musical, but I love it. It's probably one of my favorite films of all time.
You are not the demographic of this, my friend.
I say that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it feels super, but my Tarantino buddies are a very specific gentleman type. And they are a very Hunter S. Thompson,
yes.
George Foster Wallace,
yes.
LSD, yep. Bro-y kind of. And you are in a long-term monogamous relationship,
yes.
I assume, with
yes.
with a perfectly nice man.
Yes.
Anyway, I have never seen Inglourious Basterds. I have never seen... A
it's
film.
So good.
Moving pictures somehow scare me. I think that they're taking the souls.
It's
no,
true.
I have seen other movies. Weird.
What's your favorite movie?
It's a movie called Holiday, and it's with Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn, and it's from 1939, and it is a socio-political romantic comedy.
I love that.
Everyone should go out and see this movie. It is, I believe, available on like Roku or Pluto.
Oh
anyway.
My gosh. Oh my gosh. All right, Holiday. I will definitely have to check that out. Inglourious Basterds, it is a, it's set around exactly the same time, really. It is a, I don't want to call it like a Holocaust fantasy because it's
No, I know what it's about. Is it like, they kill Nazis?
Yes. It's Brad Pitt
so
runs.
I'm in favor of it. But
yeah.
what I I know it's a tricky thing to say out loud, you guys. I'm also an abolitionist.
Yeah.
Anyway, the... But there is something fictitious about it, right?
They kill Hitler. They blow Hitler up.
Right.
And they kill Goebbels and they kill, you know, all of the SS and, you know, they... So that's the fantasy part of it.
Right. Because all of Quentin Tarantino, correct me if I'm wrong, but all of Quentin Tarantino's movies seem to be some sort of fever dream. And
yeah,
where he's just like, if I ran the world,
yep,
and I had a time machine, this is what I would do.
Yep.
And you're like, great. If you could cure homelessness with a couple million, that'd be great.
Yep.
But they're just, I have fever dreams myself, so I have nothing. And they're very well done, and they're very beautifully done. So what would make Inglourious Basterds into a musical?
Because I really want to do it. I think that's
okay.
My main reason. It is. First of all, it would be so expensive. Like, talk about sets. There would be, you know, 45 different sets. It's impossible. But there, it's just got such a good story. It's got, you know, I also think musicals really excel when they're about groups. We're thinking the Jets, the Sharks. We're thinking the Gamblers and the Missionaries and the town of, you know, in River City, Iowa, whatever.
Right.
And so you have a group of these so-called bastards who, you know, would make a great 7-person, you know, ensemble. And of course you got your Nazi ensemble, and
right.
You have there's no romance in the center of it, but you have some very strong female leads. I also think that musicals do really well when there are strong female characters in it, particularly.
Yeah. Who are the female characters in Inglourious Basterds?
Well, you have essentially two. One who is Shoshana, who is really our protagonist and really the girl that we are following for most of the film. And her plot line runs sort of parallel with the Brad Pitt Bastards Killing Nazis plot line, where she has, at the very beginning of the film, her entire family is murdered by the Nazis.
Sure.
And
Bambi.
And so she escapes. And she takes over a movie theater in, I think, Paris. And she has the opportunity to show a movie of Nazi propaganda for Hitler and all of, you know, his people. And she agrees with the intention of killing them all. And so you have this woman who has this very strong want. From the beginning, you care about her. It is fascinating that there are really two movies happening at the same time. You could completely remove the bastards from this movie.
Okay.
Of course, you'd only have Inglourious at that point. But and it would just be a her story. Or you could remove her from the story and it would just be about the bastards killing Nazis. So it's a fascinating piece, and it's so well done. And Christoph Waltz won an Oscar.
Okay, so there. And who did Christoph Waltz play?
He plays Hans Landa, who is sort of the main bad Nazi, and he is very charming, speaks 4 different languages. It put him on the map, really. He didn't really have any major credits before this, but I saw it in theaters with my brother, and I turned to him and I said, he's going to win an Oscar, and he did. He did win an Oscar.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And what would the music be like? What would the – I mean, how
so- – Yeah, you have 2 options, really, and you could do both. You know,
right.
You have music of the time, which, of course, is, you know.
Swing Heil.
That's right. Or what Tarantino often does is he'll use anachronistic music. So there's like this whole sequence where I think it's a David Bowie song. I think it's Set Fire with Gasoline, or it's called Cat's Eyes, something. It's a David Bowie Cat's Eyes, something about cats.
Right.
Cat People. It's called Cat People, and
okay.
Parentheses, Putting Out Fire. Anyway, so it's a David Bowie song in the middle of a World War II movie. So
right.
Also could do it like anachronistically and just make the whole thing a rock score.
Right. Like, did you, and I'm sure you have, what do you think about sort of the Moulin Rouge of, I brought up Mamma Mia and now Moulin Rouge,
yep.
Where they're just taking rock ballads and mm-hmm. putting them in to forward the into different scenes, you
yes.
know?
Could
be something like that.
It could be. I think I would find that really disappointing, because there is a time and a place for that to happen. You know, when you have like Mamma Mia, it's the music of ABBA, and when you have Rock of Ages, it's the music of the 80s. I think this would want to have, I don't think it needs. It doesn't need the, like, if you did Rock of Ages without any of the songs, you'd
yeah.
be bored out of your mind. You'd be like,
okay.
this plot sucks. The songs bring that show to life.
There we go.
you know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, Glorious Bastards is such a big project anyway, mm-hmm. that it might actually just muddle the waters a little bit. It might just make you're just like distracted where you're like, well, this is an amazing, because the cast would be amazing. It could be anybody. And then on the storyline and the action scenes. Yeah, it would be. Yeah, I think you're right. It would need its own music so that it didn't overwhelm it. It would just accent it or accentuate it or whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
Huh. All right. What do you got? What's your next one?
Well, this one I know you haven't seen. I'm for sure you haven't seen it. It's called
Brother
called,
from Another Planet.
That's right.
Go ahead.
It's called Hot Fuzz.
I have seen that.
Oh my God. Simon Pegg, Nick Frost. It was this follow up to Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
It truly, I think maybe might be my second or third favorite film of all time. So good.
Really?
I love it.
I can't remember it. I remember Shaun of the Dead. I don't remember Hot Fuzz. I remember their cops in a small village in England.
That's
but
right.
That's all I remember. What was the story?
Basically, his name is Nicholas Angel, Simon Pegg, and he is a really good cop. He's the best cop in London. And basically, he's making everyone else on the force look bad. So they send him away to this tiny village in the middle of some, the countryside.
Cheshire.
Right. Where he basically seems to have nothing to do because it's a very quiet village. But he slowly discovers... it's a very bloody film. There are some moments in that film that are so gory that I was shocked when I saw it the first time.
Yeah.
And he uncovers that there's maybe a secret society, that is killing people in order to make the town stay perfect.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. As sort of a witchy kind of thing, or as a,
not witchy,
a sorcery or.
No, there's no magic. It's just a group of people who are like the high ups of the village, the people that sort of run the garden party, so to speak. And they if they don't like somebody or if somebody is bringing the value of the town down, they let go. Decapitations, crush their heads with a rock, you know.
Oh my God.
Crazy stuff.
What year was Hot Fuzz? Do you remember?
2004, I think.
So that is interesting. There's definitely a what? How big's that cast? Because I don't remember. That would be big as well.
I don't think so.
It's like the townspeople.
It is. That's a lot of. Mm-hmm. So in musical theater terms, anything above like 7 is a big cast.
Yes.
This would probably want like 20 people, I would say. You know, you need the two leads, and then you need, mm-hmm. you know, the secret society of, I would probably reduce it to 6, 7, 8 people. And then you need the rest of the people in the town. So it's a big cast.
I like the idea of the Music Man, where it would just be.
Yes.
Sort of, it would be a parallel with all of a sudden, like the city council members are also.
Yes.
A quartet that does barbershop.
Yes.
And anything. Well, now I kind of want to watch it again because I like that guy. I like Simon Pegg. He's very funny.
It's such a good movie. You definitely should rewatch it. It really holds up too.
And it holds up. Okay. Well, that's exciting. The fifth one. What's the fifth?
Fifth one. Well, it's so funny that you mentioned Music Man. Because the fifth one is a Stephen King novel that was turned into a movie that, most people don't think of because it was sort of at the tail end of his big sort of misery. The Shining heyday.
Right. Right.
This Good one's job. Called Needful Things, which you may remember. The movie was 1991 with Ed Harris and Max von Sydow, however you say his name.
I like to
say that it's like Damn Yankees meets the Music Man because it takes place in the town of Castle Rock, which so many of his stories
in
take
Maine.
Place there.
Yeah, yes.
In Maine. And he, this guy named Leland Gaunt comes to town and opens up a shop called Needful Things. And when you go into that shop, it just so happens that the thing that you want more than anything in the world is being sold at this sort of antiques curio shop situation. And the price of that thing is basically coincidentally whatever you have in your pocket, essentially. And you have to do a favor for Mr. Gaunt. And that favor may seem harmless. It might, but it's kind of a prank. You have to throw an apple through the window of one of your neighbors or somebody else in town. You have to, you know, spill pig's blood or something on someone's sheets hanging up. And what happens is that Leland starts to get the town to prank each other, and not even necessarily enemies pranking each other, but like enemies, when they get pranked, going, my enemy must have done this. And then there are very bloody confrontations between people with axes and hatchets and basically like, you've ruined my life. And so I'm going to like kill you for it. And so his whole thing, the devil comes to town and the devil causes chaos wherever he goes. So it's fun. I think of it as like, it's, you got this great big ensemble. You got the devil that sings.
Right.
And there's an element of fun. There is something very like wicked about it. Like as in like scary wicked, not Green Witch.
Right, right. Who plays Gaunt in the movie?
Max von Sydow.
Okay. And who and Ed Harris is our
lead.
He is person.
He is the sheriff of the town.
Okay.
So when things start going bad, you know, the sheriff's gotta get involved and he's gotta figure out what's going on.
He's gotta fix it. He's gotta figure out what's going on. It has a, the only thing I'd worry about is that if it led to paint your wagon. So yes. That would be Paint Your Wagon, is such a terrible movie until the last scene.
Really? I don't know.
The last Paint Your Wagon is of course Clint Eastwood, inadvertently singing anyway. But there's a plan. It's a gold town. It's a gold rush town in California. And the plan is that they would dig tunnels underneath the casino and the bar to collect all the gold dust that is on everybody's clothes.
Oh, wow.
And so the end of the movie, spoiler alert, 1912, the entire town collapses because they've built these tunnels. And it makes the whole movie worth watching. Not really, but almost.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a terrible film. Anyway, but the last scene is glorious. It's,
wow.
Kind of
amazing. That is crazy. I didn't know that Clint Eastwood was in a musical. You taught me something today.
There it is. Paint Your Wagon. Not a good film and not good singing. But Needful Things. Here's the thing. I've never been able to see. I think I saw one besides Stand By Me. I think I've seen one Stephen King movie, and it was the one where the guy had to stop smoking, otherwise he'd lose his pinky. And I can't remember that one, but
wait, what is this? What is this?
Let me Google the words Stephen King.
Yeah.
Stephen King movie.
Cat's Eye.
It's called Cat's Eye. I inadvertently saw Cat's Eye. Every scary movie, and that one was absurdist, except for that it was also very tense. And so I didn't thoroughly. The scariest movie I think I've ever seen was The Omen. And I had made, talking about a devil's bargain, I had made a bargain with a friend of mine that if I watched The Omen, she would watch Pillow Talk. And we watched The Omen. And then she was like, I'm tired. I'm going to bed. And I was like, you can't leave me with The Omen before bed.
Wait, she made a deal with you and then didn't uphold her end of the bargain?
I know. Yeah. We don't talk. No. Mostly because I can't remember which friend that was. It was in my college dorm co-op that I lived in for 5 years. So over those 5 years, I literally was friends with about 200 different women that I know the names of probably 13 still.
Yep.
And, but it was 100 years ago as well. So, whoa. Okay. Now that was the first amazing topic. And hilariously enough, that is 30 minutes of this podcast.
You know, I'm late to everything, but I'm really good with time. I got to tell you.
You are amazing.
But before we go, I have to know, what are your favorite musicals? I know your favorite
movie. I have terrible taste.
Let's go.
I just saw the Hugh Jackman Music Man.
I'm sorry for your loss.
A little over a winter ago. And it was good, but honestly, I love the movie.
Yes.
The movie is not broken.
No.
It actually does not need to be revitalized at any time because Robert Preston, am I getting that name right?
Robert Preston. Yes, yeah.
All Robert Preston should be preserved for 1,000 generations. I don't care if it's The Last Starfighter. He made that movie watchable. Or Victor Victoria, which saved my life. And then the other musical that I truly enjoyed, and I saw it in London in 1989, which was Chess.
Wow. And you love it.
And I love it.
Wait, and so you didn't see the revival that just happened?
I did not. I have seen one other production of Chess, and it was in a small black box theater, which is amazing that they did it. And it was one of my early dates with my husband, who also enjoys the musical Chess.
Wow. So I did not know much about Chess until I saw – my husband is a Broadway photographer. And so when he shoots the shows, we get to go to open night. It's very fun. Da-da-da.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to see it, and I was like, so this is Chess. And they made some revisions to the book, but what happened was the revisions couldn't decide if they liked the musical or not. Because the revisions kind of made fun of the musical, but then you're sort of really asked to invest emotionally.
It was
a little uncertain.
Right. I mean, the thing is you really have to just go in going, saying, you know what's compelling? Chess. The hard-assed world of chess. Remember that show that was on Netflix with that young woman who played chess?
Queen's Gambit.
That's it, Queen's Gambit. One of my brothers plays chess, and he said it was great, but he didn't like the Chess the musical. He thought that Queen's Gambit did a better job of treating chess as the serious business that it is.
Oh wow!
And but Chess the musical by Tim Rice or Andrew Weber.
Chess is I think the lyrics are Tim Rice and the music is the guys from ABBA.
Okay, yeah. And so it is larger than life and the Cold War and, you know, and there's two different endings. It might as well be The Lady or the Tiger, which is a short story from 1850. Anyway, but the thing is it's, yeah. And I'll tell you, I also, because I'm a middle-aged white lady, loved Hamilton.
Well, you know what? Honestly, that is the way it should be. That is, you know,
it was made for me.
Really?
And to some extent, because I'm a history nerd and I like very not simplistic rap, but I was there. The rap that I like was from the 80s. Uh-huh. Right. So it is. I mean, I don't mind newer rap, and then there's a lot of pop rap that is very funny and I think is entertaining. But so the fact that it was the rap is pretty simplistic in Hamilton,
mm-hmm.
and the history is so interesting, and it was I thought it was wonderful. So I really liked Hamilton.
Hamilton's great. You know, Hamilton is really, you know, when you think about all of the hit musicals, if you were to just describe them to somebody, they would sound terrible. If you're like, this is a musical about the French Revolution. This is a musical about cats. This is a musical about a very scary, deformed goblin man who kidnaps an opera singer. Like none of this sounds like a good idea, but those are the ones. And this is the other joke to me is that producers love to tell writers, oh, your idea isn't commercial. And I'm like, 9 times out of 10, the idea that sounds good on paper ends up being a terrible musical, right? You know?
I did a joke 25, almost 30 years ago when I first moved to Los Angeles. And it was a joke pitch for a TV show that got me a meeting and a lunch with a woman from NBC.
Oh, wow.
Who didn't know it was a joke, and I didn't know it was a meeting.
That is so good. Can you tell us what it was?
Oh, it was, I wanted that, my joke idea was that it would be Chico and the Man Meets Bosom Buddies, which is two Latina women move to Los Angeles, but they have to dress up like men, so they live at the Y. And she was like, this is the greatest sitcom idea. And I was like, wait, that was a bit. And then she was like, check, please.
And, oh my God. Oh my.
What? I'm not good at the showbiz part of showbiz. I'm good at the.
Well, you know what they say.
Stand up part of stand up. Yes.
Show business has more to do with business than with show.
Right. Right. And it's the show part I've always been able to do very well. And yes. And I can also grind it out when it comes to asking if I can do stand up. Yep. But other than those are the two parts that I'm good at.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is a crapshoot. And I would like to hire someone. Yep. So, yeah. But yeah. But I do, like, I own most of the old musicals, right? Sound of Music. Like
Oklahoma, yeah.
And Oklahoma always creeped me out because of the rape scene, because of the bad guy.
Yeah.
That, the bad guy creeped me out when I was a kid, so I had a hard time watching it. And then, but I do love South Pacific, and that is a spooky-looking movie. If you look at it now and you're like, everybody, the way it was shot, I think it was that Vista Vision.
Yeah.
And but Guys and Dolls is one of my favorite. And Marlon Brando cannot sing.
Nope.
And it's a little bit of date rape going on. But you know what? I like most of the Rock Hudson Doris Day movies, and that is just all gaslighting. So, and I never liked the movie Gaslighting. So, because it was too tense for me.
the vibe I get from you is not fragile wallflower. I feel you seem pretty tough to me. And yet you describe yourself as
the stuff I want to watch is very marshmallowy.
Yes.
But in real life, I am not above telling people to knock it off.
Have you ever gotten into a fist fight?
Any number of fist fights, sadly. Yes, there's. I do in my new album, Altercation, and it's called that because my last name's Cation, and I want to punch everyone in the nose.
Oh my God!
I have the when I am intimidated, I tend. Like I come, my early childhood was relatively violent. So I have been trying to deal with my temper for the entire time, the whole time of being alive. And so I'm much better at it than I've ever been. And now when I lose my temper, I tend to say cutting things and then I have to apologize for them. Yes. So it's
cutting things like you know what the personal, you know, what would hurt somebody the most and you just go right for that.
Right. It's usually never physical or racial.
Yes.
Thank you. Like I've never said the N word.
Yes.
Except good. In, I believe, right. I mean, there's no parade for that. But it's like, I don't lose my temper like that.
Sure.
Where I'm just like, I'm going to lose. Oh, you as a gay man. Might be able to judge this joke that I do on Altercation. Because what happened was I punched a guy once who was a heckler in the first year of doing stand-up comedy. He heckled me on stage. He heckled me as I walked through the bar. And then he came and he stood behind me at the bar. And I made an immature decision that if he was going to talk to me one more time, I was going to throw my beer at him. It was not a mature decision. Anyway, he touched my shoulder, and afterwards, bartender and security guy said that he was reaching over my shoulder to literally grab my boob, which I did not know that at the time, but they said that that was what he was. So when I turned around and threw my beer at him, I, by the way, missed him completely, hit the guy behind him full in the face.
Oh.
Heckler guy standing there picked up that guy's drink, threw it at me. And then the guy behind the heckler guy is soaking wet. I'm soaking wet. Heckler guy standing there laughing. So I punched him, but I forgot I was still holding the beer mug. And so I clocked him with the beer mug.
Good for you.
And he fell to the ground and he stood up and started yelling lesbian slurs at me. And so I start, I actually did call him gay male slurs.
Oh, wow.
Because it was the 80s.
Yes.
And then we were both kicked out of the bar and we didn't end up dating because it wasn't a movie.
That's good.
But that's I don't feel particularly good about using those gay male slurs, but that is exactly what happened. And that is like sort of the only time that I have used someone's like, and it was because it was because he called me a bunch of gay lady stuff. Yeah. And I was like, oh, well, this seems to be something that hurts his feelings. So
it's fighting fire with fire. You know, I relate to you in that I definitely, you know, had a period of my life where I was working through my anger issues. And not that I was like sort of I had a short fuse. I didn't. But when I would get angry, I would get very angry. And I think, you know, I don't think that everyone should get a free pass, you know, when they're that angry. But I do think that we all make mistakes. And I think that when you're in the heat of passion and the heat of whatever, you know, you fuck up and you got to be accountable for them. But, you know.
Right. 6 years ago, a giant heckler guy backed me up against a wall at a comedy club and I pushed him.
Oh, wow.
Because he was just there and security was standing right next to me, not doing anything. And so I pushed him and then he said, "You grab my dick." And then I said, "I didn't grab your dick, but look what you're wearing." Still trying to defuse the situation.
Right.
And then security jumped in and said, "You have to get out of here." And then the guy said, "Did you grab his dick?" And I said, "No, but I should have. Sure. I grabbed his." And then I was just riffing some more because I was completely on fire in my head. Yeah. And then that guy sued me for sexual assault and PTSD.
Oh my goodness.
Which gave me approximately 8 months of PTSD and cost me several thousand dollars. And that was, that was like, so I did push him and I don't feel like I don't get mad easily either, but when I do, I just have to figure out how to pause.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cause I'm not drunk. There's no excuse there.
Yeah.
I'm not ovulating. Menopause might do it. Menopause, I think, is not been studied at all because why would you study women? But
Of course.
You're no use anymore. We don't have any interest in that.
Yep.
Is there an original idea for a musical that you have that you want to write?
Well, I am working on a new piece that is an original idea.
Okay. Is it horror? Is it?
It is comedy? Not. It is a comedy. All of it? It is a comedy. Okay. It's a very dark comedy, but it's a comedy nonetheless. I'm super fascinated by missing persons cases or cases where groups of people go into the wilderness or, you know, say into the snow or whatever, you know, for the purposes of hanging out or having a vacation or whatever. And
you're like, what are they doing?
Literally.
Well, they're mostly just drinking and eating s'mores.
Exactly.
Anyway, go ahead.
And then they are discovered to be murdered or dead.
Right.
And investigators cannot figure out what happened. And there's a number of these cases and it
real cases,
where
a group of like four people will end up dead out in the woods or something.
Yep. And the circumstances are so peculiar and make no sense. So you can't, they could never figure out what did happen to them. You know, like the group would be split up. Somebody might be naked. Somebody might be torn to pieces. Somebody might be completely safe, but starved to death, you know, with a room full of food. Like those kinds of things are super fascinating to me. So, you know, my writing partner and I basically came up with this idea that the first act would be sort of, you know, I love the idea of an opening number that is this group of people being like, we're partying, we're having the best time of our life, we have our whole lives ahead of us, yay. Opening number ends, flashbulb, like now they're, it's the final photo. They were never seen again, basically.
Right, right.
The rest of Act One is trying to figure out what happened, trying to put the pieces together, and a lot of these hypothetical situations, and the dead characters, you know, reenact all of the things, and they don't solve it. They don't get to the bottom of it. But then in Act Two, we get to go back in time and we get to see what actually did happen. And oh. The cop at the center of it, you know, she'll be very, very funny. And she's kind of an idiot herself, but she's charming and, you know, in her own way ends up getting to the bottom of it and figuring it out.
Sure.
Because she's sure, an out of the box.
Nobody's good at everything.
That's right. That's right. So this is, I've had this idea for a really long time, and I think there's a lot of potential for comedy in this.
Especially if they were ripped by bears.
Yeah, maybe.
Huh?
Maybe.
Can't
maybe.
Tell. Don't want to give it away.
We also don't know.
2030.
What I'm loving doing is putting details into the songs of pieces of evidence that I have no idea where the evidence is going. We haven't figured it out, but I like the idea of basically putting a bunch of pieces of evidence on stage, and then we as writers have to retroactively make it all make sense.
Right. Make that the puzzle.
Exactly.
Oh, that is interesting. I love that idea. That sounds great.
If you could write a musical, if you could turn something into a musical, or if you could unturn something into a musical, what would you do?
Well, the interesting thing is my family is so very odd and yet not, right? Mm-hmm. It's not odd to me because these are the people I'm related to and I grew mm-hmm. up with them. But there is a very, very crazy story that I've told. It's on the band camp. Rangers have heard it. It's the Uncle Tom story. My stepmother's brother-in-law. So we can blessedly say that we are not blood relations.
Wow.
Do you remember the Tylenol scare of the early 80s?
Yes.
Have you remember that? Okay.
I do.
So there was a copycat incident in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. Somebody put cyanide in a can of Coke and somebody died. And that was my Uncle Tom. And the story.
Oh, he did it or he was the victim?
Uh-huh.
Got it.
The way I tell the story is like a 7-minute story. But the story is he tried to poison my aunt for the insurance money. And the cops figured he ended up killing himself. And the cops figured afterwards that he tasted the Coke to see if you could taste the cyanide. And then he died. Couldn't happen. That's funny. Nicer guy, by the way. He was a real piece of shit. Anyway.
Funny and sad.
And then my Aunt Shelley, sure, for his family. But my Aunt Shelley said that it was the Tylenol poisoner who was never found. And that it was some sort of, and it wasn't a copycat. And there had been a miscarriage of justice, except for the fact that the police found in his pocket a spoon with cyanide on it. Anyway.
Oh my God. How did he put the cyanide in the Coke?
I assume with a spoon.
Oh, he opened it. I thought maybe he like put a pinprick in it.
Like he opened it, he put the thing in it, and then, you know, and then offered her the Coke, or was going to offer her the Coke. Wow. But wanted to see if you could taste it.
I love that. That's really funny.
It's really the fastest justice of the world. It's really nice. It's really well done. Anyway, you could make that into a musical. Another one is my brother was in the Moonies and we had to kidnap and deprogram him.
Oh, what are the Moonies?
The Moonies, it's like the Hare Krishnas of the 70s.
Oh, I see.
Reverend Sung Young Moon was eventually arrested. And the Unification Church still exists.
Yep.
Even though he has passed.
Oh, wow.
But we got my brother out of it. And
what a life. What a life and what a family you've had.
Right, right. My oldest brother is an evangelist with his own church and has written his own version of the New Testament.
Oh, my goodness.
With his GED. Wow. And it's a lot. I assume he line vetoed where everyone was nice. Was supposed to be nice to somebody. And the cover of it is some real AI slop. I think it's like The Last Supper where everyone's wearing a crown. So
that is crazy.
Yeah. My brother Scott once, he knew Jeffrey Dahmer. He lived in the same neighborhood. They used to share a liquor store. And my brother Russ, when my parents got separated, I'm the youngest of six. My brother Russ is the golden child. And the principal of our grade school offered to adopt just him.
Oh, my God. That's such a weird ask to be like.
That's the best of the litter. I'll take him and the rest of you. And then my sister has the greatest abandonment story that's ever existed because it's a caricature of an abandonment story. She was five. She went to grade school after my parents separated. We got evicted. I was three. My four older brothers and my sister all went to school. My brother Scott, who was about eight or nine at the time, was responsible for picking my sister up after school and taking her to the place where we were now living. And he forgot because he was a child. And he went to where we were now living. And so Darla came to where we lived and we had moved.
Oh, my God.
Yes. It was a caricature of abandonment. Here's the great thing is that if you knew my sister, Darla, she knew where she went to my grandmother's house, which was like six or seven blocks from where we used to live. And if you knew my sister, you know that she probably just walked into my grandma's house and said, well, thank God they're gone. What do you want to do?
Oh my God. I love a Darla. Is Darla still with us and around?
Darla, everyone in my family is enormously successful.
I love that. You included.
Yeah. Me included. To some extent, I don't know, because my three oldest brothers, whether it's nature or nurture, but my father remarried almost immediately after my mother's death when I was like just had turned seven or eight.
Oh, wow.
And my stepmother spent 10 years essentially kind of creating structure and fixing our lives. The joke is that she's all the parts of The Sound of Music except for the Nazis.
And I love that.
There was singing, there were charts, there were graphs, there was a great deal of chores, and there was a lot of singing and music. But she was also incredibly strict and very frugal. We weren't allowed to use the Yahtzee paper. We had to copy the Yahtzee paper onto a fresh piece of paper just in case the queen came over and needed the actual Yahtzee paper.
Has anybody ever gotten to the end of a Yahtzee pad? Do you know what I mean?
I can't imagine. At what point don't you say, wow, this is boring? This is not the greatest game in the world.
It's not. It's not my favorite game, but I have a lot of people in my life that love it. Also, another classic board game that I had forgotten about or didn't really know from my childhood, but has come back around is Aggravation. Do you remember Aggravation?
I never did play it. What is Aggravation?
Aggravation is basically like you have like four men. Why do we call little game pieces men? It's terrible.
Meeples. That's meeples. They're called. My husband's a game designer. They're called, which is just the word for man people. So meeple. Well,
I love it. There you have four little meeples. And you have to roll a one or a six to get out of home. And then you go around the board and you have to go all the way around the board. And then you get your people into their little treasure chest, whatever. And if somebody lands on you, you die and your meeple goes back to home. So that's you may have gotten one of your meeples like all the way around for 20 minutes and you're almost at the finish line and then you get killed. And then that's very aggravating, hence aggravation.
So it's just a roll your dice, move your mice?
Roll your dice, move your mice. But there's a little strategy.
And then you're kicked back. Okay.
There's a little strategy because there are six like spokes to the wheel essentially.
Oh, there's six paths?
Well, six, it's like a circle board, but then there's like six like spokes like coming out of them.
Yeah.
And you get one of the spokes and the person who's across from you is your teammate. So really it's a great game for three groups of two.
Right.
And so it's a great party game if no one wants to have too much fun.
I have, and she has done an episode of The Dork Forest. My friend Sheila Ratner is obsessed with the game Rummy Cube.
What's
which
that?
Which is a tie. It's like, remember the card game Rummy?
Yo, I love Rummy.
It's that with tiles, sort of.
Oh, it's an online game.
No, There's an online version. But it's essentially, there's tiles like Scrabble tiles, but they're numbers. And you're trying to make three of a kind or more. You're trying to make a run of three or more. And you're trying to get rid of your tiles, kind of like Scrabble. Yep. And you can move all of the pieces during your turn to recreate different numbers and runs and all these things. So you look at a lot, you look at a table full of numbers and you have to rearrange them in your mind before you move any of them kind of on the table. Because if you move them all and you can't put them, can't do what you wanted to do and you can't put them back, there's a forfeit. You have to pull three extra tiles. It's a perfectly fun game.
Love it.
But I like a game with a story. My favorite board games right now is a game called Jaws, based on the movie Jaws. And it's a cooperative game where three people play the three guys of the boat. And one person plays Jaws. And Jaws would like to eat you, and he sometimes does. And it's amazing. It's a really fun game. It's a board game. And nothing has recreated the tension of that movie better than that board game. And
when did it come out?
It's a really good board. Probably 10 years ago. Not like a long after the movie. Ravensburger is the name of the publisher. And it's actually a really fun game.
Is it easy to learn?
It's so easy.
And how fast is like a round or how fast is a game?
The game takes about 35, 40 minutes max.
Wow. I think we'd like this. I might buy this.
Yeah. And it's two people can play it. So because one person can play the three people and one person can play the Jaws.
Oh, I love the Jaws figurine. That's cute.
And it looks really good. It's got really good toy factor, which is a term that I'm saying wrong, but Andy says because he's a game designer.
Toy factor.
Guess what?
Yeah.
We've spent the last 30 minutes just getting to know each other.
I love that.
And that, I don't mind that at all. This is where I could have you back and you could tell me about dark, dark, dark musicals.
Anytime, all the time.
Oh, this has been very fun. Ryan Scott Oliver, you guys. And there's a ryanscottoliver.com. And there's an at Ryan Scott Oliver. And the name of the book is How to Succeed in Musical Theater Without Really Dying. And it's available wherever you would were to buy books. Check it out.
Yeah,
check it out. Thank you so much for doing the show, Ryan.
It's my pleasure. It's been a great time talking to you.
Yes. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?